The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome into our Pip Panther Rants, another Sports Rants podcast. Vlad Harris, your host, brought to you by the Sports Drink. It's the 21st. Happy early holidays to you guys. Excuse me, let me sip my coffee here. You know, the holidays are coming up. You know, down here in Houston, we're supposed to get a really big wind chill. 16, 17 degrees, maybe a low of 9. I just hope we don't have any issues with frozen pipes and whatnot, because I hate that shit. You know, I hope we avoid whatever it is we dealt with, you know, back in when we had that snowstorm in 2021. God, that was almost 2 years ago. But I guess on the plus side, the kids will be out of school, so that's not that big of a deal. In fact, let me go to weather real quick, because I'm probably going to have to, buy some shit for, all right, let me take a look here. Yeah, weather right there. Let's see. Next hours, let's see, and tomorrow. Okay, what's the forecast for tomorrow? Okay, tomorrow it's going to be low of 18, high of 62, which makes absolutely no sense. Friday, 23, high of 35. I can deal with that. I mean, that's basically Pittsburgh weather for me. I mean, it's no big deal, but I don't know, maybe this is getting overblown. I don't know. But, you know, I was my kids complain about the cold, and, you know, I said, at least you guys got a car, get carpooled to school, or have to take you to school. Whereas I had to, basically bundle up and go to the bus stop. Which I told a funny story about that the other day. I talked about how you know, we had that blizzard in 94. I mean, we had two blizzards. We had the 93 blizzard, and I think we had a one in 94 as well. But what I remember vividly about the 94 one was that we were off for most that week, pretty much almost all that week. And I just remember, the snow was still on the ground, and then we got freezing rain the next week. And I just remember trying to go to my friend's house so we can walk to the bus stop. And my mom was like, you might want to leave early because, you know, it's freezing rain. It's going to be hard to get down to that bus stop. So the yard that I usually cut through, which is one of my neighbors, I would walk through their driveway and up their stairs, because, you know, it was on a hill. Well, I stepped 1 foot in their driveway, and I fell. And, of course, you know, I didn't have a backpack. I just had, you know, high school, I was carrying a book. And I got up and I, you know, dusted myself off, and I tried to walk on the driveway again like an idiot, and I fell again. And my mom is sitting there watching me from down below, outside the door, you know, outside the door of the house. And she's like, yeah, you might want to try, you know, you might want to try another way, maybe go through the yard. It's like, okay, you just see me fall twice. And it's obviously going to be next to impossible to get to the bus stop. But yeah, sure. So I walked through the yards, and sure enough, I mean, given that you have freezing rain and you have all this snow, obviously the snow is going to be ice as well. So I was basically holding on to my to the fence while trying to move my way to my friend's house. Eventually, I got up there, and we pretty much ice skated the entire way down. Yeah, that may have been, maybe that was 93. It was, I remember, I'm thinking back to this now. It may have been 93, because there was a blizzard. But I just remember it was here, 92, 93, 94. I mean, we had a bunch of blizzards, I remember. It could have been 93. Because I remember I was in some business class in high school, and I remember I only had it for the fall semester, but, you know, that semester ended in January. But yeah, I slid down it. You know, we pretty much ice skated down the hill, you know, down the hill to the bus stop, and of course the bus stop was down the street. I ended up having a bruised hand and a cut because, you know, I slipped and fell on concrete. Some people rode their backpacks down the streets. It was a mess. My sister, on the other hand, being, you know, she waited till last minute, of course, and missed the bus. And my dad, being my dad, he had to take her to, you know, well, for starters, he, they were, like, getting to the stop, and my dad had to get to work. And, of course, my sister and her friend, my dad had to drive them down there. My dad's screaming, like, You guys just had to fuck around, didn't you? Just had to fuck around. And of course, you know, he was pretty pissed off. You know, it was, and yeah, I mean, they missed the bus, obviously, because he tried to drive him down in, you know, his four-wheel vehicle. It's bad enough that my dad had to go to work. I mean, he had to be at his job. And if he had to stop what he was doing because you couldn't do your, hold your end of the bargain, he was going to lay into you. Rightfully so. But yeah. But by God, I made, you know, by God, I made it to that bus and got to school. You know, I couldn't miss that day because, you know, it could have been life or death. But speaking of all this, my dad, I see there's been some deaths. Just one happened last week, one happened this week. Mike Leach passed away at 61. Mike Leach was a fun coach. He was always on the Sean Salisbury show. Like, Sean Salisbury would have him down here in Houston. And they would go from talking football to random shit. Like, early in their segment, I remember he was talking about quarterbacks and accuracy and how you really can't really teach accuracy. The quarterback either has to have it or he doesn't. And if he doesn't, you got to, you know, you have to scheme to, that helps them. And, you know, it went from that to talking about Taco Bell, what their favorite go-to items from Taco Bell were. That's pretty much what a Mike Leach conversation for the most part was. I mean, he was 61 when he died. Franco was 72. I mean, they were getting ready to honor Franco for this Immaculate Reception. And, you know, I was reading some of the tweets about how, you know, for instance, Colin Dunlap was sad that, you know, guys in their 70s wouldn't be able to make the game because of the frigid weather. And I mean, my dad was at that game. He has season tickets. He sold his tickets already. I mean, he wasn't going to go down for that. I mean, if you realize how many times the 70 Steelers have been honored in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, maybe longer than that, 30 years, you know, missing this thing wasn't going to be that big of a deal. I mean, I was at that last game at Three Rivers Stadium. That was in 2000, and it poured rain all day. It was miserable. I remember some people that we developed friendships with, sitting in those seats. A lot of them left because they got tired of the rain. They got sick of the rain. But they reenacted the Immaculate Reception, that day. And, of course, they had all the Steelers from the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s. I just remember Eric Green was announced, introduced. And I just remember he'd left Pittsburgh kind of on a, I don't know if it was a bad note, but he just, he had some parting words. And when he was introduced, people were like, he's here? What's he doing here? I mean, he was a very talented tight end. I mean, I felt he could have been one of the best. I mean, he had some really good years for the Steelers. But, what happened to him, actually? Let's see. Now let's take a look at his Wikipedia. Let's see. For starters, he held out his rookie year with the Steelers. But he made an impact when he returned. But then the next year, he missed 6 games for violating the substance policy. It wasn't for steroids, obviously, but it was something else. But he violated drug policy. Then he had a Pro Bowl season in 93. If you remember that, he caught 63 balls for 942 yards. And, of course, he held out in 94 as well. And, yeah, he was going after that year. And let's see here. He signed with Miami, but then he was released a year later. Mainly because of his weight problems and work ethic. Because, yeah, he probably got his money and didn't care, and then injuries kept him out. But in the end, he caught 362 balls for 4,390 yards and 36 touchdowns. But if he would have kept it all together, he could have been up there with Shannon Sharp. I mean, he was a really good, when he was there, he was good. In 90, he had 34 catches, 387 yards, 7 TDs. The next year, he had 41 catches, 508 yards, 6 TDs. And I remember he got injured. And, he got hurt. And then it got shortened. Then the next year, the substance abuse issue. Then he had that one really good season in 93. 94, I think he, 4-6, his production did drop, actually. 4-6 catches, 618 yards. And, of course, he went to Miami and had similar production, if not less. And Jimmy wasn't crazy about him. And that's pretty much what's going to happen to you if you know. Let's see. Was Jimmy Johnson the coach, though? That's what it said, though, I guess. Yeah, he went to Miami to bring back the Dolphins, and of course. Yeah, they lost to Jacksonville in that really bad game, and they gave up 63 points and pretty much ended Jimmy's career and Dan Marino's career. All right, let's get back to on topic, but I just remember growing up. I'm 43 now, but I just remember, growing up. I said that twice. Get to the point. I just remember as a teenager growing up, I remember 1992 was the 20th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception, and it was a big deal. It was actually a pretty big deal then, because you got to realize in 92, that was 20 years ago. I mean, the 70s weren't that far off from what you thought at that point. I mean, the 70s were still kind of fresh in some ways. And so That's why for most of the 90s, we always had the 70s, especially with the Steelers. The 70s drilled down our throats. You know, the 70s were all, you had to hear about how awesome the 70s were for the Steelers all the time. How great it was. They won games. You know, how awesome things were. And of course, how booming, you know, Pittsburgh was at that time. It wasn't just downtown. But when the mills were up, still, I mean, you can go anywhere and shop. I mean, you didn't have to go to the malls or whatever. My parents would tell me stories about how they would go to East Liberty to shop. They would go to McKeesport to shop, Homestead to shop, because there were stores, places to buy stuff. I mean, hell, I mean, every Easter, usually in the springtime, I would go to Revco, because Revco would have these monster sales on baseball cards. And of course, none of them were worth dick in the end, but it was fun. But people do downplay the immaculate reception, and I totally understand it, because we lost the next week. Or I shouldn't say we, I should say the Steelers lost, because I didn't play on the team. The Steelers lost the next week to Miami, which happened to finish 17-0. But I think the significance of that play, what made it so great and an important part of history, is that if you look at the history of the Steelers franchise at that time, it was really bad. And that game, you know, and the handful of times that they made the playoffs, they really, you know, they didn't do anything. You know, and you can say that game pretty much, you know, signified that, you know, that they could win in this league. They could actually do something in this league for once. You know, that's one thing I can say that play symbolized more than anything else, was for all the mediocrity the Steelers went through. Well, not mediocrity, they were just bad. It showed that play showed a glimmer of hope that, you know what, that this franchise can win. And they did. They ended up winning 4 Super Bowls in that decade. But it became, you know, that became a hell of a standard to live up to. Because, you know, when Bill Cowher took over, they were winning games, but they just could never get it done in the playoffs. And, you know, finally Bill did. And, I mean, even I lost, was losing faith in Cowher. But then he, you know, they won. And then, you know, they won one more time in that decade with Tomlin. But yeah, the 70s did set a pretty big standard for, you know, the next coaches and the next generations of players to live up to. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's gonna be sad on Saturday to celebrate this without Franco. But he lived it. He played in the game. And of course, we've celebrated so many times. I mean, it's something that Steelers fans do celebrate. I'm not sure if they do now, but back then it was something we celebrated. I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, it got talked about in barbershops and bars when that anniversary came up. But I do remember that when it was the 20th anniversary, it got talked about. I remember people just, you know, they talked about it because it was still fresh in people's memories. I mean, I think we forget that the 70s were like over 40 years. I mean, 1970 was 52 years ago now. But yeah, now, but back then it wasn't too far off. But, you know, football lost a, you know, a great college coach and a football legend. Not so much NFL. Well, I don't mean to say not so much, but he was great in college and he was great in the NFL, Hall of Famer. All right, let's talk about Pitt, shall we? Um, Pat Narduzzi obviously ran his mouth yesterday like he always does. I mentioned that Drake May from North Carolina received offers of $5 million to go transfer. And naturally, people aren't, you know, people got upset over this. And Pat says this is getting out of control. People are assuming Pat means that the transfer portal players asking for money is out of control. And it's really not that at all. What he means is the tampering is getting out of control. Pat has never had an issue with players making money off themselves. He supports it. But, you know, people are going to take it any way they want to, because that's just how it is. And people are saying, people want Pat to name names. Well, names were named last year or earlier this year, and people laughed. So what difference does it make? It makes absolutely no difference whatsoever, because it's going to be the same old, same old. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter if Pat names names. He's just saying that this, you know, that's what's going to happen. And you wonder if college football becomes like Major League Baseball, where only a few teams will benefit or programs will benefit from this. But Pitt had a bunch of decommitments and transfers, and Pitt seems to be rebounding. I mean, they've had a whole bunch of guys opt out for the bowl game. I mean, a lot of them are going to the, you know, the draft, which happens. Pitt had a player recommit, which was kind of odd. What was his name? Zion Fowler decommitted, and then he recommitted. One of Pitt's decommits went to end up at Fordham, which was a lineman. But now, so far, now there's two receivers that transferred. And I believe one of them was, one player in particular was Jaden Bradley, and he put a, thing on his page about how he's grateful for every opportunity he's had and second chances, but he's, I guess, hasn't found a home yet. And he's, you know, and these are just cautionary tales of guys who leave. Sometimes where you go, you may not get the chance that you want, or you might not get a chance at all. So I'm not sure what the story is on how he left here, but, you know, I mean, I'm sure he's got plenty of offers, but I'm sure they're probably ones he doesn't want. But sometimes that may be all you get. I mean, there's more guys in the portal this year than last year, and there's a chance that a lot of these guys aren't going to find homes. I mean, Jalen Bard hasn't, you know, another receiver who left Pitt hasn't found a home yet either, and sometimes you just gotta go where the, you know, what's gonna be best for you. I mean, look at JT Daniels is on his third school. He's at Rice. I think, I mean, if you're a quarterback who's played, you know, I mean, a guy like JT Daniels is gonna, you know, no matter where he goes. I mean, he was at USC, he played at Georgia, and he played at West Virginia. Shit, he's on four teams now. Four teams. So whatever. I hope it works out for him. But yeah, a lot of these guys aren't gonna find places. And like I said, what gets kind of lost in all this is the fact that you know, when you're an athlete, when you get a scholarship, you get an opportunity to get a college degree without having, you know. And, you know, so you have something to fall back on if football doesn't work out for you. or basketball or whatever. And there's some guys that are leaving expecting to get some NIL money, and it's not everybody's going to get, you know, six figures or whatnot. I mean, you got to take what you can get. And no matter where you go, there's going to be a two deep, no matter what. I mean, you're still going to have to put the work in. I mean, I understand why some players leave, whether it's because the coach that recruited them left, or the head coach left, or, you know, or just the program's a mess. I mean, there's reasons for it, but for some, it's, you know, you have to weigh all your options. But, yeah. All right, so we touched on all that. What else is happening? Oh, yeah. Stuff that's going on in my personal life. Well, you know, work is work. But I've had an issue with a raccoon in my house. And, one night when I was sleeping, I'm thinking one of my neighbors has been feeding these raccoons. And when I was sleeping, first off, from the beginning, I was on my patio one night. And I'm just sitting there having my cigar. And these raccoons normally climb out, or they're crawling along the fence. And this one jumps down, and he approached me on my porch. Well, actually, it's a she. It was a mother. It was a bigger one. And I was like, what the hell's going on? It approached me, and I got up naturally because, you know, you don't... One false move, and you don't know what's going to happen to you. And plus, raccoons carry rabies. And so I got up and got inside the house. And then there was two more of them with them. So one night I'm sleeping and I hear this noise by my fireplace. And I hear footsteps above me. Next morning I wake up, there's a hole in my roof. Luckily it was at the end of the roof where the gutter is, so it's not as bad. But yeah, they dug into my house. And luckily, the way this house is set up, it didn't get into my attic or anywhere else. It got stuck in like this little crawl space where there's nothing there. It's just a space. Doesn't connect to anything. And sure enough, it was a mother and it was pregnant and was trying to nest. But luckily for me, I made its life miserable enough where it left. I wasn't really a good neighbor. You know, I was noisy and whatnot, which was fun. It left naturally and never, you know, didn't come back. Well, it did actually. They were still, and I found how they got to my roof. Initially, there was a tree branch that was a really big branch that is kind of connected to my house, and so I had to grab a ladder naturally and. I saw the branch down because, you know, I couldn't really wait on a tree person to come do it. I did it. And then I trimmed all the branches, cut it all up. I was basically, you know, sealing off any entry points that I could. But they kept coming back. And they were just digging through my yard at this point. And so I went and called animal control and they set traps. And fun story about this. The guy who did my traps, Heinz Ward was his client. So Heinz Ward is living somewhere in Houston. He bought a house. So he's around. But getting back to the story here. Initially, starting off, I was catching possums. Because they like the same food as raccoons. Then one Sunday I woke up, I caught both my traps had skunks in them. And I need to get these things out. It was a Sunday. So I went on, of course, I went on YouTube and looked up how to release a skunk from a trap. Now, the first skunk was like, it was an adult, it was older. And it seemed like it's been trapped before because it seemed like it knew the routine. It knew the drill. So I released it, I was able to, I threw the blanket over the trap and I had a rope and I was able to loosen the door and use the rope to pull the trap open. So I was far away from it and it scurried off. But the other trap wasn't as easy. The way they had this trap set up, it was impossible to throw the blanket over it. And it was a younger raccoon, not raccoon, skunk. And it was very, very easily frightened. I mean, one little step and it was lifting its tail. And of course, they were trapped and it rained all night. So I would think that it's probably cold and scared. And I had to, I was able to fish the rope, to the trap. And then I pulled the rope so I could pull the trap out a little bit. I had to do it slowly. And then I just, I was able to get the door up. And I propped the door up with a flower pot. And then, the skunk sat there for a minute, but eventually it left. But yeah, the possums were easy because the possums, they don't do much. They just growl, they just give you a net and a dirty look like they're pissed off at you. But they won't do anything. Skunks are just frightened or scaredy cats. But yeah, I caught a skunk yesterday as well, and it was a young one, same ordeal. But luckily on this one, I threw a blanket over it, but I didn't release it right away. I left for a few, like for a half hour, so the skunk could at least calm down. Then I went and released it. But I did catch two raccoons eventually, because they came, because I thought they left, but they came back. Let's see. I heard, because I heard them, I heard one making those noises it makes. So I look out, and I was like, oh, I caught one. And then I see the other one scaring away from me because it must have saw me open the blinds. It went to the other trap where there was food there and it got caught. And sure enough, it was the mother and the kid. And, they were both asleep. And of course, the mother obviously was growling at the guy, I guess, that went to pick it up, to relocate him. And of course, when he went to relocate the mother, she actually hopped back in the bed of his truck. And she wouldn't leave, and of course, and then it climbed in his engine underneath his truck, so he had to call for extra assistance. So I kind of felt bad about that, but I haven't heard anything since. I'm hoping I'll hear any more. But yeah, that's pretty much what's been going on with me for the most part. Work, catching raccoons and whatnot, getting in Christmas shopping. But anyways, guys, you have an awesome holiday. If I don't, doing more podcasts before the holiday. Hail to Pitt. Go Steelers. Rest in peace, Franco.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online, schedule package pickups through the dashboard, and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.